Red Granite Press presents West of Sin, a thriller by Wesley S. Lewis, read by Alicia Bucci.
Chapter 1. Jennifer Williams' tears had turned to anger about 20 miles back. She had no plan and no destination, just a basic need to keep putting miles between herself and that hotel room thick with the stench of sweat and betrayal. The past hour was a blur. She vaguely recalled running for the elevator and stumbling through the lobby. Her wits had returned to find her speeding through the Nevada desert in a stolen Chevy Traverse. Jennifer had forgotten to give Brian the valet ticket after using his rental car to pick up the extra marketing flyers he'd insisted on ordering, but she'd remembered it when making her escape. For the first 30 miles or so, she simply drove, not considering where she was going, just trying her best to keep the shimmering lights of the Las Vegas Strip in her rearview mirror. When the city disappeared behind a mountain, she dried her eyes and started seeing red. 1 year had passed since their conversation in the lounge atop the Stratosphere Tower, 1 year since he'd confided in her that he thought his marriage was ending, 12 long months since she'd privately decided to wait for him. Jennifer wasn't so naive as to think Brian had left his wife for her, but she had presumed his marriage was the only thing keeping them apart. In the 4 months since his separation, they had walked a fine line between friendship and something more, enjoying the occasional movie or dinner together, but keeping things platonic so as to avert office gossip and avoid complicating his already sticky divorce. Now that the divorce was final, Jennifer had expected this trip to end, or preferably begin, with something a bit more intimate than the prolonged embraces they sometimes shared after a night out. What she'd gotten instead was the crushing realization that her hopes for the coming months, being in a real relationship by fall, introducing him to her family over the holidays, going someplace tropical for her 40th birthday, were never going to come true. From some dark corner of her mind came the terrible thought that maybe he'd never wanted more, that he'd used her as an emotional placeholder. She pushed the thought away. This was not the time to question things she knew, or, at the very least, things she'd known an hour ago, to be true. She was buzzed from 4 rounds of drinks and punchy from 10 hours spent pitching retail properties to bored tenant reps who cared more about the real estate beneath her skirt than about anything in New Wave's portfolio. She was tired, she was lost, and to top it all off, the lace pattern on her expensive French panties, the kind made to be seen, not worn, had imprinted itself painfully on her backside. Comfort had not been her top priority when selecting her attire for the evening, and nothing she'd chosen was well suited to a long drive. For the first time since leaving the hotel, she took note of her surroundings, looking for any clue as to where she might be. Her rearview mirror reflected nothing but a black sea of desert. To the left and right, she saw more of the same. A couple of miles ahead, a single cluster of lights beckoned from the left side of the road. The conspicuous click-clack of her high heels on the tile floor made Jennifer wish she'd left the overpriced stilettos in the car and walked barefoot. Wearing a slinky black dress into a remote truck stop was uncomfortable enough without her shoes announcing her entrance. A quick glance at her surroundings eased her mind. The truck stop only had one customer, and he seemed oblivious to anything beyond the contents of the beverage case. She approached the front counter. The leather-skinned woman behind the register gave an uneasy smile, revealing 2 missing front teeth. Jennifer forced a smile of her own. "Excuse me, I seem to be a bit lost. Where are we in relation to Las Vegas?" The clerk sighed and, in a voice that suggested a pack-a-day habit, said, "You're about an hour west of Vegas. Head east on I-60 till you hit the interstate." When Jennifer didn't immediately respond, the woman added, "Just turn right out of the parking lot." "Thanks." Jennifer glanced around the store. "Where is your restroom?"
"Restrooms for customers only."
Jennifer took a deep breath and forced another smile.
I'm going to buy a cup of coffee.
We're out of coffee.
Okay, I'll buy something else.
It's out of order.
What?
We only got the one restroom, said the clerk. And it's all plugged up.
Jennifer exhaled slowly. Is there another gas station around here somewhere?
Lots of them up the road in Pahrump.
How far is that?
About 10 miles west. Just turn.
Left out of the parking lot. I got it. She turned away from the cashier. Thanks. Jennifer didn't need to pee so badly as to drive another 10 miles in the wrong direction. But there was no way she could make it back to Las Vegas without caffeine. She worked her way to the back of the store, where the lone customer, a well-built man in a pair of khaki shorts and a blue polo shirt, was still studying the beverage case. She spotted a row of iced coffees and reached for the cooler door. The man in the blue shirt pivoted toward her.
Can I help you?
She hesitated. No, just getting a drink.
What do you want?
He opened the case.
I'll grab it for you.
Jennifer was tiring of these socially awkward desert dwellers. Thanks, she said, reaching into the case, but I can manage. As her hand came to rest on the glass bottle, she froze. Either the day's stress was getting to her or something on the other side of the case had just moved. She peered between the shelves, trying to see into the unlit stockroom. Behind the row of beverages, a pair of eyes stared out of the darkness. She released the bottle and took a quick step back. She struggled to make sense of the eyes, which seemed to float in the darkness. Then she saw the gun barrel wedged between two rows of sodas, and the missing piece fell into place. In the dark stockroom behind the drinks, someone in a black ski mask was pointing a shotgun at her. Chapter 2. Jennifer screamed and stumbled backward, trying to put as much distance as possible between herself and the gunman inside the cooler. 20 feet to her right, a door swung open, and another man in a ski mask stepped out of a small restroom, carrying a chrome-plated pistol. Still reeling, Jennifer tried to turn toward the front of the store. Her high heels skidded on the tile floor. She lost her footing and fell hard. Ignoring the pain in her tailbone, she used her hands and feet to scoot backward across the tile, not thinking about anything but escape. She kept kicking and pushing for a couple of seconds before realizing she'd backed into a row of shelves. The masked man from the restroom stopped at her feet and raised his pistol. Jennifer closed her eyes and waited for the bullet that would end it all. When the bullet didn't come, she looked up at the man and waited for him to say something. He just stared at her. She followed his gaze down to her lap and saw that her dress had ridden up to her waist. Her expensive French underwear was meant to be seen, but not by him. She grabbed the hem of her dress and slid it down over her hips. With her modesty restored, she crossed her ankles and placed her hands in her lap. The man in the mask looked on without a word. From somewhere near the front of the store, a male voice bellowed,
"Well, that worked for shit."
Jennifer looked in that direction, saw a masked man pointing a pistol at the back of the clerk's head, and shuddered at the realization that he must have been hiding behind the counter the whole time. Somewhere on the other side of the shelves, a heavy door opened with a thud. A moment later, the man in the blue shirt rounded the end of the aisle with his hands raised, followed closely by the barrel of a shotgun, the one Jennifer had seen inside the beverage case, and the masked man who'd almost scared her to death. Without taking his eyes off Jennifer, the man holding her at gunpoint said,
"I told you we should have grabbed her when she walked in."
"Fuck you, Al," responded the man with the shotgun. "How was I supposed to know she'd look in the cooler?"
The man guarding Jennifer turned and pointed his chrome pistol at the man with the shotgun.
"Do I have to shoot you in the face? Is that what it's going to take to get you to stop saying my name?"
The man in the blue shirt took a slow step to the side, out of the potential line of fire.
"Let it go," called the man guarding the cashier. "I'm pretty sure everyone knows your name by now."
"I'm sorry," said the man with the shotgun. "It just slipped out."
Well, it's been slipping out too goddamn much,
replied Al, turning his unsettling gaze back toward Jennifer. And this is taking too goddamn long, and we've got too many goddamn witnesses.
Maybe we ought to just bail, said the man with the shotgun.
Maybe you shouldn't have told us you know how to break into an ATM when you clearly don't, said Al.
All I said was that I'd broken into slot machines. Then you guys said that slot machines don't hold enough cash. Then I said, what about an ATM machine? And you guys got all excited. But this thing ain't like no slot machine. It's like a fucking safe.
We don't have time for your excuses. Just figure out a way to get the money out of the machine.
Al's right, said the man behind the counter. We need to get the money and get the hell out of here before anyone else shows up.
Can I make a suggestion? Asked the man in the blue shirt.
Al turned and pointed his gun at the man's forehead.
If you're going to suggest that we shouldn't leave any witnesses, I'm starting to agree with you.
Jennifer was beginning to dislike the man in the blue shirt.
No, said the man, unfazed. I was going to suggest that, rather than focusing on getting the money out of the machine, you should focus on getting the machine out of the store.
It's bolted to the floor, responded the man with the shotgun.
No, it's not, said a raspy voice.
All eyes turned toward the clerk.
I know, she continued, because they've moved it twice since I've been here.
Al glared at the man with the shotgun.
You didn't even check to see if it was secured.
What's it matter? It ain't gonna fit in the car.
He's right, said the man guarding the cashier. We can't exactly strap it to the hood.
Take my truck, said the man in the blue shirt.
Al's eyes narrowed.
Truck?
The white half-ton Ford parked out at the pump. It could carry at least six of those machines. If this were a real estate transaction, thought Jennifer, these robbers would owe him a facilitator's fee.
Where are the keys? Asked Al.
The man glanced down at his khaki shorts.
Front right pocket.
Al stepped forward and, without breaking eye contact with the man, reached slowly into the pocket and pulled out a set of keys. He took a step back and glanced at his partner holding the shotgun.
Watch these two, and don't do anything stupid.
Without waiting for a reply, he turned and ran to the front of the store. He paused at the door just long enough to scan the parking lot and tuck the chrome pistol into his waistband before sprinting outside. The man with the shotgun looked down at Jennifer, then back up at the man in the blue shirt, then down at Jennifer again.
Okay, he said. You two move up to the front of the store and don't try anything funny.
Jennifer wondered if he actually thought they might try something funny, or if he'd said that because it felt like something a masked robber should say in such a situation. She had no intention of trying anything funny, and the man in the blue shirt clearly intended to cooperate. She pulled her feet under her, wincing at the pain in her bruised tailbone. The man in the blue shirt offered his hand.
Let me help you.
She accepted, and the man hoisted her to her feet. His mouth formed a faint smile.
I bet now you wish you'd let me grab that drink for you, huh?
Now I wish I'd driven to the next gas station, she replied, not seeing any humor in it. The man with the shotgun motioned them forward with the barrel of the gun.
Get moving.
Watch where you're pointing that thing, said the man in the blue shirt.
Just move.
The three of them walked to the front counter.
Okay, said the man with the shotgun. Both of you get back there with...
Jennifer was pretty sure he was about to say the name of the man guarding the clerk, but he was interrupted by the tail end of a white pickup crashing through the glass doors at the front of the store. The tires squealed as the truck skidded across the tile floor. Jennifer turned away from the careening vehicle and closed her eyes, certain she was about to be crushed against the row of celebrity gossip magazines lining the front counter. As she braced for the truck's fatal impact, she instead felt a pair of hands grab her by the waist and hoist her into the air. Suddenly, she was hurtling headlong across the counter. She opened her eyes just in time to see the clerk and the other masked man jump back as she landed at their feet. She sat up and realized that the commotion had stopped. Peeking over the counter, She saw that the truck's rear bumper had stopped less than a foot from the man in the blue shirt and the man with the shotgun. Al forced open the driver's side door and hopped out.
"Are you fucking nuts?" screamed the man with the shotgun.
"Shut up and go get the ATM," said Al. "Both of you, go. I'll watch them."
The third robber hurried from behind the counter and headed for the far end of the store. The man with the shotgun raised his left hand and flipped Al the bird before turning and chasing after their partner. Al turned to the man in the blue shirt.
"You go too."
"Why?"
"Because that thing's too heavy for them to carry themselves."
The man glanced at the women, then back at Al. Without a word, he turned and followed the two masked men. Al opened the tailgate of the pickup and sat on it.
"You two come around here where I can see you."
Jennifer and the clerk inched around to the front of the counter. Al pointed at the ground.
"Have a seat."
Jennifer kicked aside a few shards of glass and lowered herself to the floor, minding her bumps and bruises, careful not to let her dress ride up again. Al watched, not saying a word. Jennifer found his gaze more disconcerting than his gun. From her spot on the floor, she could hear but not see the three men struggling with the ATM. One of them instructed the other two to grip it from the bottom. That was followed by a loud crash, followed by a lot of cursing, followed by someone, she was pretty sure it was the man in the blue shirt, suggesting they turn it on its side.
"How lucky for them he's here to help."
Another loud crash preceded a yelp of pain from one of Al's accomplices. This robbery had all the subtlety of a Three Stooges routine. Al glared at Jennifer.
"Does this amuse you?"
"No, of course not."
"Then why the stupid grin?"
She hadn't realized she was grinning. She swallowed the smile and said, "Just imagining I'm someplace else."
"Oh yeah?"
He rose to his feet.
"Where?"
"Anywhere but here."
"Yeah," he said, walking toward her. "You look like you were planning on being someplace else."
He stopped at her feet.
"You're way too dressed up for a shithole like Pahrump. What happened? Got lost on your way to Sin City?"
Jennifer stared up at the masked man. "I was out for a drive and got a little turned around."
"A little turned around, huh?"
"That's right." She tried to read his eyes, wondering what thoughts were dancing around inside that ski mask.
"Stand up." "Why don't you leave her alone?" asked the clerk. "Why don't you shut up before I bash your head in with the butt of my gun?"
"It's okay." Jennifer rose to her feet. Al looked her up and down, then pointed his gun at her chest.
"Turn around."
"Why?" Her gaze darted between his gun and his eyes.
"I forgot to frisk you. You could be carrying a concealed weapon." "You didn't frisk me either," said the clerk.
Al pointed his gun at her.
"This is your last warning."
The clerk didn't respond. Al turned his attention back to Jennifer.
"I said turn around."
"I can assure you I'm not carrying any weapons." She tried to suppress the note of fear creeping into her voice. "Where would I be hiding them?"
"That's for me to find out."
With the gun still in his right hand, he grabbed her by the waist and spun her around.
"Put your hands on the counter."
Shaking, she complied. She felt his body brush past as he knelt behind her and heard him set the gun on the ground. He placed his hands gently around her left calf and slid them slowly upward. They reached the hem of her dress with no indication of slowing.
"Can we get some help here?" asked someone behind them.
Al removed his hands from her thigh. She heard the gun being picked up and felt his body brush by again as he stood. She risked a glance over her shoulder and saw the other three men straining to hold a small, heavily damaged ATM with a shotgun perched atop it.
"Can we get some help?"
repeated the man in the blue shirt.
"This thing is really heavy." "Jesus Christ!"
Al walked to the men and grabbed the shotgun off the machine.
"Why don't you just give this guy a gun?"
Jennifer half sat, half collapsed onto the ground and tried to assure herself that the danger had passed.
"Okay,
I can't hold it any longer, said one of the masked men. Set it down.
With a collective grunt, the three load-bearers lowered the machine to the ground. When they'd righted themselves, Al tossed the shotgun to the one who'd just spoken.
Be more goddamn careful where you leave that.
Jennifer saw that the other robber had tucked his pistol into the waistband of his pants.
Are you going to help us load this? Asked the man with the shotgun. Get that old bag to help you, said Al, pointing to the clerk. I've got something to take care of.
He turned and walked toward Jennifer. She tried to scoot away, but once again found herself backed into a shelf.
Come on, he grabbed her by the wrist.
She struggled to free her arm, but his grip was too strong. He yanked her to her feet.
If you need me, he said to his cohorts, I'll be in the stockroom.
Chapter 3. Terrified, Jennifer strained against Al's pull as he dragged her away from the counter.
Make it quick, said the man with the pistol in his belt. We can't afford to wait around after this thing is loaded. I'll be quick, said Al. How's it that you always manage to avoid the hard work? Asked the man with the shotgun.
Al paused for a moment, apparently considering the question. Jennifer felt her last strands of rational thought slipping away. She scanned the room for any sign of hope. Helpless, she locked eyes with the man in the blue shirt, knowing that even if he wanted to help, and she was pretty sure he was more concerned with saving his own skin, there was nothing he could do. He stood with his hands on his hips, watching her fate play out before his eyes.
It's like this, said Al, clearly impressed with the answer he'd constructed. There are two types of people in this world.
Jennifer didn't get to hear Al's philosophical explanation of the categorical dichotomy of mankind because at that moment, the man in the blue shirt pulled something from beneath the tail of that blue polo. He moved with such speed that Jennifer had no idea what he was holding until she saw the muzzle flashes and heard the first two shots echoing off the walls. Al released Jennifer's hand and stumbled sideways before collapsing to the ground. The other two men, who hadn't been watching the man in the blue shirt, were slow to register what had just happened. The man with the pistol in his belt was turning toward the smashed doorway, perhaps thinking they were being ambushed from outside, when the next shot tore through his ribs. As the man with the pistol fell to the ground, the man with the shotgun finally identified the source of the gunfire. He was in the process of raising his weapon when the last two shots caught him square in the chest. He tumbled face first onto the tile floor. Jennifer placed her hands over her ears but couldn't block out the painful ringing. The man in the blue shirt approached and circled the bodies. When he seemed satisfied, he turned to Jennifer and the clerk. The clerk sat on the ground, her knees tucked up to her chest. Jennifer leaned against the counter, not trusting her legs to support her. The man said something Jennifer couldn't make out. She removed her hands from her ears.
Are you okay? He asked again.
She nodded, unable to speak.
Good. He surveyed the carnage. I'll secure their guns. You...
He seemed to lose his train of thought.
You call...
He staggered to the right and braced his free hand against the rack of audiobooks.
Are you all right? Jennifer managed to ask.
Just a little sleep deprived. Maybe I should...
He tumbled forward, pulling the rack down with him, sending CD boxes skidding across the floor. The clerk screamed in surprise. The man lay motionless among a few dozen abridged readings of 20-year-old bestsellers. Jennifer rushed forward and knelt beside him. The clerk stood to get a better view.
He having a heart attack?
Jennifer watched the man's chest rise and fall.
I think he just fainted.
Lucky him.
The clerk took a seat on the tailgate of the crash pickup and glanced around the store.
How am I going to explain this to my boss?
Jennifer looked from the damaged truck to the bodies of the three robbers and thought, how am I going to explain it to mine? Chapter 4. Earlier that day. The casino was surprisingly crowded for a Wednesday night. The crowd was only a fraction of what it would be in 3 days,
when weekend warriors from Southern California and Phoenix would occupy most of the tables and slot machines. But the floor was alive with the voices of dealers and cocktail waitresses, and with the constant ringing of electronic games. Fortunately, Jennifer knew where the rest of her team would be. At the center of the casino floor, where the gaming tables gave way to the open-air cocktail lounge. This delicate merging of vices allowed those who'd sworn off gambling to mingle with those who'd sworn off drinking. Cutting across the gaming floor, she turned just enough heads to reassure her that the slinky black dress was doing its job. She'd cursed herself for a full week after buying it, but every time she'd consider returning it, she'd picture herself walking up to Brian, the wispy fabric clinging to her body in all the right places, the almost dangerously short hem dancing with every sway of her hips, and that image had quelled any lingering doubts.
"Jen!" a woman called from somewhere inside the lounge.
A waving hand beckoned beneath a Riviera-themed banner advertising something called Les Tournois at La Condamine. Jennifer could just make out the bare shoulder and golden locks of the firm's newest hire. Ashley Thomas was a year out of college, blonde and attractive enough to spark rumors that she'd gotten the job on the merits of something other than her resume. Jennifer was quick to quash such gossip, not just because she'd once inspired similar rumors herself, but also because Ashley was competent. While most of the women envied Ashley's natural beauty, Jennifer envied her natural ability to navigate even the most tedious of deals. As Jennifer neared the row of small cocktail tables, each occupied by two or three of her colleagues, she scanned the group, hoping to spot a pair of piercing green eyes framed by a thick head of salt and pepper hair. With considerable disappointment, she realized that her entrance had been lost on the one person who mattered. Her boss and soon-to-be lover was not among the dozen or so New Wave employees.
"Hey, Roomie!" Ashley rose from her seat and gave Jennifer a hug. "I think I owe you an apology."
"For what?"
The young woman released her embrace. "For doubting you when you said this conference would make me question my career choice. My feet are blistered, my throat is sore, and I'm going to gouge the eyes out of the next guy I catch staring at my ass while pretending to read a marketing flyer."
Jennifer laughed. "Just staring? Nobody has propositioned you?"
"Not yet."
Ashley slipped back into her chair. "But the night is still young, and this guy is three sheets to the wind." She motioned to the young man sharing her table. "So we'll see what happens." Jennifer choked back another laugh. Around the office, it was an open secret that Tom Blackwell was smitten with Ashley. If he'd had his wits about him, he likely would have lost them at the mere suggestion, joking or not, that she might be open to such a liaison. Jennifer took the seat next to him. "Tom, you'd better pace yourself. You have to make it through two more days."
"Four more," he said, speaking somewhat slower than normal. "I'm staying through the weekend."
"Good Lord, 3 days isn't enough for you?"
"Careful," said Ashley. "It's a sore subject. The airline lost one of his bags and ruined his plans for the weekend."
"Really?" Jennifer turned to Tom, intrigued. "Do tell."
"Yes," said Ashley with a smirk. "I'm still waiting to hear about this big money you were going to win."
"See," said Tom, "this is why I don't talk about my personal life at the office. I mentioned one little detail and you're already using it to tease me."
"Who's teasing?" asked Ashley. "You said you had a chance to win big money, so I'm curious."
"I said real money, not big money. And it's not going to happen now, so just forget it."
Ashley rolled her eyes.
"Well," said Jennifer, "I guess there are worse things than spending a weekend sipping Coronas by the pool."
Tom drained the last of his drink.
"I don't think the Blue Parrot has a pool."
"The Blue Parrot?"
"It's on the north end of the strip, across the street from the Stratosphere. That's where I'll be rubbing fanny packs with the rest of the Priceline shoppers."
Jennifer winced. In her eagerness to move the conversation in a more cheerful direction, She'd inadvertently drawn attention to the fact that Tom was the one person in the group who almost certainly couldn't afford two extra nights at La Condamine Hotel and Casino. Tom was one of two team members, along with Brian's elderly assistant, Grace, who worked on salary rather than commission. He'd given up a presumably less than lucrative career producing internet videos of young daredevils performing all manner of death-defying and sometimes illegal stunts, and taken a position producing marketing presentations for New Wave. He never complained about his job, but Jennifer got the impression that commercial real estate didn't quite live up to whatever expectations he'd had for his late 20s. "Tom," she said, "my advice is to find some sweet young gal to help take your mind off your troubles until the airline finds your bag." "Oh, they know exactly where it is. In a locker in the TSA office. They found it 3 hours after they lost it, but now they're holding it pending, as they put it, verification."
"Verification?"
"Yep." He shook his glass as if looking for any stray drops of alcohol hiding between the ice cubes. "My tax dollars hard at work fucking me over." Before Ashley or Jennifer could respond, he slammed his empty glass on the table and rose to his feet, almost knocking over his bar stool in the process. "We need another round. Jennifer, what are you drinking?" Although she wasn't sure she wanted to start drinking yet, she planned on needing her energy later. Jennifer reasoned that Tom was a man in need of a mission. "Martini," she replied. "Two olives."
"Okay, one martini, one appletini, and one 7 and 7 coming up."
He turned and disappeared into the crowd between the tables and the bar. For a moment, neither woman said anything. Finally, Ashley let out a stifled laugh.
"What?" asked Jennifer.
"That poor boy needs to lighten up."
"If you ask me," said Jennifer, "that poor boy needs to get laid."
Ashley's expression grew serious. "A lot. He needs to get laid a lot." Both women erupted in laughter. When they regained their composure, Jennifer asked, as casually as she could, "Have you seen Brian?"
"Yeah, you just missed him. Tammy needed help drawing up a letter of intent."
"Oh, for the love of God. Now she can't draft her own LOIs? Someone needs to tell her she's about 2 decades too old for that helpless schoolgirl shit." Ashley giggled.
"If I didn't know any better, Miss Williams, I'd say you're jealous."
Chapter 5. After 2 hours and 4 rounds, Jennifer, Ashley, and Tom were all in much better spirits. Tom had seemingly forgotten about his thwarted plans. Ashley had apparently decided that Tom wasn't so uptight after all, and Jennifer was only mildly distraught that Brian hadn't yet returned. Had Tom acquiesced to Ashley's repeated pleas to let her get the next round, the three of them might have gone on like that for another hour. However, he insisted on getting it, only to encounter an unexpected protest from his feet. He stood, took one step forward, stumbled, and nosedived toward the tropical-themed carpet, knocking an empty tray from the hand of a passing waitress as he fell. Both Ashley and Jennifer leapt from their chairs and, working to contain a mutual case of the giggles, helped Tom to his feet.
"Tom," said Jennifer, "I think it's time we put you to bed."
"Maybe so," he muttered, struggling to regain his composure.
"I'll take him if you want," said Ashley. "Hang out and visit."
Jennifer thought of Brian, probably just then wrapping up Tammy's letter of intent, possibly already headed back to the bar.
"Are you sure you don't mind?"
"Nah, I'm beat anyway. If I'm going to survive tomorrow, I should get some sleep."
"All right, I'll try not to wake you when I come in."
"You won't."
Jennifer cast a stern look at the inebriated young man.
"Tom, don't give her any trouble."
Tom grinned.
"I don't know the meaning of the word."
Ashley laughed. "I'll keep him in line." With Tom's arm over her shoulder, she led him through the crowd in the general direction of the elevator bank. For what felt like at least an hour, Jennifer caught up on the life of every coworker she could even remotely stand to be around. Still, there was no sign of Brian.
She knew it had to be after 11, but like every casino, La Condamine had no clocks on the gaming floor. She reached for her bag, then remembered that her cell phone was upstairs in her room. After weeks of planning and an hour of primping, she discovered that her little box clutch, which complemented her little black dress, was capable of holding either her cell phone or her makeup kit, but not both. Unfortunately, all her planning and primping now seemed to have been in vain. With tomorrow's first round of meetings not much more than 8 hours away, she had little hope that Brian might still make his way back downstairs for a couple of drinks. Across the table, Meredith Higgins and Steve Howard argued about their differing interpretations of a popular reality TV show. Jennifer reluctantly accepted that the evening was not likely to improve. Hoping to avoid a round of obligatory goodnight wishes, she stood and walked toward the bar, allowing her coworkers to assume she'd gone in search of another drink. Once out of sight, she cut through the crowd toward the elevator bank. 5 minutes later, she was inside an express elevator whizzing toward the 32nd floor. Away from the excitement of the gaming floor, she felt the first pangs of exhaustion. For most of the day, anticipation had held fatigue at bay. In the past few minutes, that barrier had fallen. She studied her reflection in the mirrored walls of the elevator. From the neck down, she was the beacon of feminine sensuality she'd aspired to be. The view from the neck up, however, told a different story. Her eyes hung heavy with weariness and disappointment. And age. She took a step to the left, allowing her face to disappear behind a framed advertisement with the headline, Les Tournois at La Condamine, the Strip's premier poker tournament. I bet that explains the crowd downstairs. She slid a finger along the smooth gold frame and let her mind wander to Brian. Would he be asleep yet? Would he be receptive to being awakened? Her finger wandered to the panel of buttons and made slow circles around the number 41. Maybe he's just watching TV or reading. She pictured him lying in bed, a paperback in his hands, reading glasses perched on his nose, a glass of scotch beside him, his salt and pepper hair still wet from his evening shower. Would he be glad to see her? Maybe she could say she needed advice on a deal. And I waited until almost midnight to ask. She could say that Ashley's snoring was keeping her awake. So I threw on my cocktail dress and heels and went for a walk. With a loud ding, the elevator slowed to a stop on 32. The doors opened. Her fingers continued to circle the button for the 41st floor. She stared into the empty corridor, searching for a plausible excuse. After a moment, the doors began to close. She abandoned the well-fondled button and extended her arm to stop the doors. Patience, she thought, stepping into the empty hallway. Outside her suite, she swiped her card key, one of the few things that fit inside her tiny clutch bag, and eased open the door, hoping not to wake Ashley. Ashley was not asleep, nor was she alone. Trapped in a momentary state of shock, Jennifer stared and thought, "Well done, Tom." Her eyes took in the images faster than her mind could process them. Ashley's toned, arched back, Ashley's blonde curls brushing against the hummingbird tattoo on her right shoulder blade, the strong, masculine hands gripping Ashley's perfectly round ass. Until she realized she was witnessing something that she wasn't meant to see. She took a slow step back, hoping to escape without causing the couple any embarrassment. "Sorry to stop by so late, Brian, but my roommate is fucking the multimedia guy." She almost had the door closed when, through Ashley's rhythmic bouncing, she glimpsed the owner of those strong, masculine hands. Her mind struggled to make sense of it. Tom doesn't have salt and pepper hair.